91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Mark Haney, who's out today. It's the time of year when gardens are full, flowers are blooming, and trees are bursting with fruit, but that doesn't mean you don't have questions about your lawns and gardens. Joining me today to talk about what you should be doing now are Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturalist and chairman of the Taking Root campaign, Scott Berline, co-owner of Home Meadow Song Farm and director of the Community Garden Program at Turner Farm, Peter Hunninger, and Campbell County Horticulture Extension agent, David Kester. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or email us, talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So how are things looking right about this time of year?
We had a really nice summer as far as temperatures and rainfall. And, of course, about 2-3 weeks ago, it stopped. And now we're hot, we're dry, and things are showing the symptoms of that. A lot of our trees are yellowing, losing foliage, and our lawns are starting to brown. So it happened in a hurry, and I think just the fact that we had so much moisture, we had roots pretty close to the surface, and now all of a sudden when it's hot and dry, it didn't take long for them to show the effects.
So should everybody just be watering?
Not necessarily. I think especially for our turf grass, I would probably just give it some time and see if we don't get some rain. Now, your trees and shrubs, maybe that's something, your most valuable landscape plants, I would probably consider watering those, but, the most valuable things.
And anything you might have planted in the last year or two, I would go ahead and take care of.
So do you do a lot of watering at the zoo?
Yeah, we're on life support, what we call life support right now, just dragging the hoses out, getting things on plants that, really need the big trees, the valuable trees and shrubs, and the newly planted material.
Yeah. And with the fruits and vegetables, your raised vegetable beds and things like that, you need to kind of watch those. But the one thing is that this kind of cooler, wet weather, too, we were slow in terms of having tomatoes and peppers producing. So this heat has really kind of kicked them in. And so, it's actually kind of a benefit there. But, remember, your garden needs about 1 inch of water a week. And one thing, when things really dry out with tomatoes in particular, and say some things like melons, try and do some moderate watering. Sometimes if you give them too much water, they may get a kind of a, cause them to split.
Well, is it better to water every day just a little bit if you need 1 inch a week, or should you water every other day, or should you just water it 1 inch on Monday and not come back till next Monday?
Well, for me, with newly planted material and with trees, which is my focus mostly, I would prefer to get a good solid inch of water or irrigation or rain, whatever it happens to be, once a week, let the soil dry out, and then water again, fully saturate the soil, let it dry out, and then water again. For lawn, it's a little different. They want water more often, more consistent moisture. And then vegetables are probably about the same, I guess.
Vegetables once or twice a week. Mm-hmm. I definitely don't think, if you're doing it by hand, do you only do a little at a time? You just got to make those judgments. But if you're flooding a bed or trying to do, all at once, I'd just say once a week or break it into two times if you have the time or inclination.
The exception to all that is right now we are right in the best time to be reseeding and establishing a new lawn. And if there's one thing that, those tender little grass seedlings need, it's to be constantly moist, not saturated. And that can mean watering every couple of days, obviously more often than once a week, especially in this kind of weather.
Now, what happens? We were talking before the show started about how one part of town might get a whole bunch of rain and another part may not. What happens if you water because you think it's not going to rain and then you get drenched with rain? Is that going to cause a problem?
Over the long term, if your plants are wet all the time, it can cause root issues, rotting, diseases, things like that. If you mess up once or twice, and obviously we get 3-day rains here, so plants are adapted to handle that. But it's the constant sitting in water that can be a real problem.
During dry periods like this, I think it's less of a problem because it's going to dry out fairly certain. But, one thing that when you brought up the idea of when you just had sown some grass seed, same thing. If you have if you have early carrots in or if you've planted spinach in your garden, keeping the soil lightly moist, watering every other day or putting a light remay or row cover over the top of it or shade cloth to protect the tender young plants. until the weather gets cool and goes into the fall growth period is an important thing to consider in terms of your watering. So the type of plant, the age of the plant, and whether it's a perennial or annual or, you know, all things that need to be taken into consideration in terms of the watering schedule.
Another point, you know, with that, with the inconsistent rain and the spotty rain that we've had lately is, you know, you could be at work and get rain all day long and then go home and your house has not gotten any rain. It can fool you. So the best thing, you know, if you're not certain if you need to water or not, is just check your soil a little bit. Just do a little, you know, take a trowel out, dig a little hole. If it's moist, you're fine. If it's dry, you need to water.
How far down to you should you go?
A couple inches.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU, and I'll warn you now, the show gets a lot of calls, and so if you want to get your question in, I suggest you get on the line now. The number is 513-419-7100. You also can email us questions, talk@wvxu.org, and you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. David, you talked about seeding your lawns and that sort of thing. Now, tell me a little bit more in terms of what people should be thinking about now, and is it too late to start, or is now the right time?
We're starting to run out of time, and so I would, if I was deciding to do that, I would do it very soon. And I would, the most critical thing is to evaluate your lawn, determine whether you need to start over or you need to just renovate with some new seeds. The most critical thing is get the seed in contact with soil. If you're just going to throw it on top of dead grass or existing lawn, it's not going to have as good a chance to germinate and show you some success. We are coming up in October, November is when we really like to fertilize our lawns in this part of the country, the cool season grasses. I sure wouldn't do it any earlier than October or November with how dry and hot it is right now. But, you know, it's a great time to take stock of your yard. And if you've got some holes or some things to be replenished, get that seed down now.
I'm going to interrupt just for a moment with some breaking news. We don't do that often, but a judge has ordered Kentucky clerk Kim Davis to jail for refusing to issue marriage licenses. And we will have more on that story. That's in Rowan County, Kentucky. So we'll have more on that story this afternoon during All Things Considered. Back to the gardening. Tell us a little bit about trees. You talked about watering trees, and I think people don't often think about watering trees. They think a lot about maybe watering their flowers, watering the bushes, but you don't think about a tree. And if you are going to water a tree, those trees are big. How much water do they need?
Well, and you think about it, the trees are clearly the most valuable assets in your yard. So it's worth protecting those and thinking about trees before your lawn and before all the other things. That's your long-term investment in your landscape, usually. What I like to recommend, again, is that inch of rain or that inch of irrigation once a week during the growing season. And there's nothing real magical about that inch, except it seems to work. Your best bet if you're just starting out is to, like I said before, do that little test with your soil and make sure you need to water. But if the soil is moist, you don't need to water. If it's dry, go ahead and water. And water over as broad an area of the root zone as you can. Not just put a hose right near the trunk, let it run for a long time. Generally, I think with a standard sprinkler, running it for about an hour once a week, every 5 days, will get you through the dry periods.
What about trees that maybe have had a rough time through the summer and you see a lot of dead branches? I know I look up sometimes and there's some things up high in the tree that I worry are going to come down and hit somebody. Is this a good time of year to get the trees pruned? Or is pruning the right word, cleaning out the dead wood?
Any time that you see dead wood in a tree, then I would get it out of there. But generally we prune them in February, March, something like that. But getting dead wood out is great to do at any time you see it. So do that. And then, you know, there's a lot of our smaller trees and shrubs. We have things such as gator bags that can be put on the tree and they slowly seep the water in. And then just, you know, trickle hoses and things like that really help.
Well, somebody just, you read their mind. Somebody just asked the question, what is the value of those water bags that you see on the trees? I don't understand exactly how they work, because if they're full of water, even though they don't have a big release, it seems like that water wouldn't last very long, yet they seem full all the time.
What we do is you can zip two of them together, so you're doubling it, and then they really do slowly seep. And these are really for smaller plants. This isn't going to work on a gigantic tree, but a smaller newly planted tree or shrub, they're just ideal. And you'll see cities and municipalities using these all the time, and it can really make the difference between death and survival.
Again, our number, if you have a question or a comment, is 513-419-7100. You can email your questions, talk@wvxu.org. Charlie's calling from Hyde Park. Hi, Charlie. What's your question?
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I planted a bunch of hydrangeas in May of this year, down in a bed where it gets afternoon sun. Otherwise, it gets shade. They're bobos. And they are, I water them twice a day, 15 to 20 minutes each time. And one has died completely. It looks like two or three others might die. They're not in standing water or anything like that. And the ones that are still living really aren't doing much. They are flowering, but they're not a nice, pretty white flower. They're kind of, I don't know, green and gray. I wanted to get your opinion on that.
My guess is you're probably watering too much. I would go to once every other day, maybe once every third day. Did you pull the one that died out? Did you get a chance to look at the roots?
Not yet, no.
Okay, try pulling that out and see if they smell rotted or if it's really wet in there when you pull it out. My first guess is it's probably you're just getting too much water on those plants.
Yeah, we have that exact cultivar in front of our office, and I don't think it gets water, but maybe once or twice a week. And this is their second year of establishment, and that it's just been, you know, gorgeous, and it's really a great plant. I would really, again, slow down on your water. You're going to love that plant when it's grown properly.
Does that answer your question, Charlie?
Yeah, I just want to make sure once a day, about every about 15 minutes, something like that, every other day. With a sprinkler,
yeah, once every third day at the most, I would say, and then you know, just kind of check that soil out. Take a trowel out there and just kind of, or stick your finger in it, you know, in the soil. And if it's moist, leave it alone, and just wait for it to dry out before you water again.
Thanks so much for your call, Charlie. We appreciate it. Well, you're listening to Cincinnati Edition as we're talking about your lawns and gardens today. Again, if you'd like to get your question in, call 513-419-7100. Email us, talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter, and we'll continue our discussion in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Mark Haney. If you haven't heard, a judge has ordered Kentucky clerk Kim Davis to jail for refusing to issue marriage licenses. That's in Rowan County, Kentucky. We'll have more on that story, and I think I said during All Things Considered, but of course Here and Now starts at 2 o'clock, and you can also hear more information there. We're talking today about your gardens, your lawns, and your trees. My guests are Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturist and chairman of the Taking Root Camp, Scott Berline, co-owner of Home Meadow Song Farm and director of the Community Garden Program at Turner Farm, Peter Hunninger, and Campbell County Horticulture Extension agent David Kester. You can call in at 513-419-7100. Email us your questions, talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Well, we do have a question from B, who wants to know the best time to sod and what food to give it. Has a steep slope and grass seed washes away.
Sodding now is okay. The biggest thing that you've got to find is a source for your sod. And when they are cutting the sod, it's obviously the sod farms are very dry now. Most of them irrigate. The thing that you have to remember is when they cut sod, they leave the majority of the root system and soil back on the farm. So you are getting a live plant with a limited root system. And when you put that down, you have got to water pretty continuously. It cannot be let dry out at all until it's well established. So finding the sod, there's a number of companies here in the greater Cincinnati area that carry it, but I would call them and find out. And then, you know, you can do that all the way up until the ground's frozen and be pretty successful with it. But keep it watered. I once had a specialist who told me, if you ain't growing algae, you ain't growing sod. So keep it wet.
What about the whole idea of that hillside where grass seed washes away? Do you have to sod it? Are there any other suggestions of what you might do for something like that?
Ground cover, of course, or just simply mulching if you can. I know the mulch may come wash off as well, but sometimes there's just situations where you don't want to get a lawnmower on it, and other alternatives are better, such as mulch and or ground cover.
Well, some people use ornamental grasses or sedges. I mean, that's a longer, shaggier look, but that's one option too.
Joy has emailed a question to us. She's from Kings Mill, and she says she has a raised bed of asparagus, and it's not doing well. So she wants to know, should she compost? She's worried about disturbing the asparagus crowns.
You can add compost over the top to that. I would probably wait until we've had several frosts, and then she could cut the dead foliage off, and then I add an inch or two of well-rotted compost to the top of that through the winter, and I think that's really beneficial, and it seems to help rejuvenate it a little bit and get it off to a good start in the spring.
Well-rotted compost, is that the stuff that already looks like dirt?
That's right. Yes, it is.
Yeah. All right, so you don't want to see an eggshell. Yeah. You know, we have a compost pile in our backyard, and my husband's always trying to talk me out of putting eggshells in there because it seems it takes them forever to decompose, but I've heard they're very good for the compost pile. Where do you stand on that?
I think it's excellent.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they don't really decompose, but they still provide the calcium.
And... Yeah. And when you turn it and you sift it, you know, they get broken up. I mean, I usually just crumble their shells in my hand before I throw them in our compost bucket. You know, so, I mean, that kind of speeds it up. So if you just got two halves in there, it's going to take longer. But if you crumble them, it speeds it up a lot.
Yeah, we're not so good about turning the compost pile. We're trying hard not to create garbage. We don't really use it for dirt so much. So I guess that takes a little bit longer. As far as the asparagus, she was talking about the raised beds. Do you have to water more in a raised bed than you do if the garden is directly in the ground?
I don't. It kind of depends on the structure of soil within the bed. But one of the advantages of a raised bed during a wet season is that they drain faster. So, yeah, you do need to kind of watch them a little bit more. And sometimes during the droughty season, depending on the structure of your soil, you may need to water it a little bit more than you think. So just keep a close eye on it. And I think what we were talking about before, just simply sticking your finger in there and, you know, do you feel any moisture? Because sometimes the top half inch will be dry and dusty, and you go down and it's really quite moist. So that kind of finger prod or open to saw it up with a trowel and take a look at it is very important. And also what's funny about the raised beds, too, if you have a wooden box bed, like a cedar bed, you've got to really make sure you saturate the outside edge of the bed because they do kind of wick and kind of dry out from the outside and move towards the center.
Bob plans to kill all of his zoysia grass in his lawn after it's dead. Then he wants to know advice for a type of seed to put in.
Wow. Bob needs to probably think about killing that zoysia grass as soon as possible because it will go dormant as soon as it gets a frost on it, and then he will not be able to kill it. It'll just overwinter in a dormant state. What if he's going to kill it, he's got to put on a chemical such as glyphosate and kill it while it's still actively growing and green, which is right now, and then after it dies back, he could come back and reseed into it.
All right.
Visualizing how to get seed through dead zoysia is going to be tricky. You might wait till spring or use it, maybe a slit seeder.
Yeah, they sometimes put ryegrass in, you know, those just to green them up, but it is tough. That's, you know, that's a really dense, thick matting of turf, and it is tough to get seed through it.
Our phone number, 513-419-7100, if you have a question or a comment. How are the farmers markets doing now? Is there a lot of produce still available?
There is in our county. It's really looks good, and I've heard that, you know, around the area. I think they had all that rain early led to some diseases, and so tomatoes are a little bit more scarce than they have been in other years. But sweet corn looks great, and squash is, of course, you know, plentiful. And we're really starting to see some unusual things show up on the markets, and just some
just
spaghetti squash and some of these individual melons that are so tasty, and people are really starting to branch out a little bit. And we've got, you know, such a great ethnic population in the area that they are requesting some of the really hot peppers and things like that, and these growers are meeting that demand.
Yeah, there's some interesting things. The Northside Farmers Market seems to be doing really well. That's on Wednesdays from 4 to 7. A couple weeks ago, we bought these little Mexican cucumbers, which kind of look like the woman who was selling them was calling them dollhouse watermelons. Mm. But they're little tiny cucumbers, and they were tasty. Also, at the Franciscan Community Garden, with the Turner Farm Community Garden Program, I work with some refugees from Bhutan. And they grow some pretty interesting things. There's a variety of cucumber they grow that's very large, but still very tender, thin-skinned, and very delicious. And so there's, you know, because different ethnic groups are coming in, we're really being introduced to a lot of different things.
We want to let you know that next week we will be doing a show on farmers markets next Thursday, so a week from today. So if you'd like to tune in for that, you may as well. Ernestine called in from Dayton, and she wants to know how she can get rid of mushrooms in her lawn.
You know, you really need to live with them, and I hate to tell you that, but there are no fungicides that I am aware of that are labeled to remove those, and they are not living on anything. They're living on dead organic material, and if you just continue to mow and to eradicate them, pick them, get them out of there, you'll eventually get rid of them. But I just don't know of any kind of fungicides that's labeled, and really, I don't think any of them would be effective against that. And
well, it's been a bad year for mushrooms. Well, it's great for the mushrooms,
right.
Not so good for people
right.
that don't want them in their yards.
It has been wetter than usual, and you're just seeing them, and they're living on dead material, you know, decomposing it. And I guess, you know, it's hard to look on the bright side, but I there's just no other way than hand picking and eradication.
But really, other than aesthetic, they're really not damaging anything. I mean, they're, you know, that fungi and mycorrhiza and all that's part of the life cycle of the soil. I mean, the big picture is probably a benefit to your
yard. Yeah, absolutely.
They tend to be a sign that your soil is better than mm-hmm. average. You usually don't
really?
See them in terrible soil.
Yeah, right. Biologically active.
Well, there you
yeah.
go. That's the positive
right.
outlook for
yeah.
that.
Yeah. The silver lining. We had one.
Yes.
Do not eat them, though.
Right.
Unless you know what you're doing.
513-419-7100 is our number if you have a question or a comment. Marion's calling from Hyde Park. Hi, Marion. What's your question?
Hi. I want to say hi to David. We've worked together through Master Gardeners, but I have a question regarding my echinacea that I don't know if it's a bug or a virus that basically gets in and just sort of snaps off the stem a couple of inches below the flower head. And do you know what that would be and what I should do? Do I need to eradicate or spray or what?
Marion, that echinacea, that's I believe that's coneflower, right?
Yes.
Okay. Boy, I don't know. Have you seen anything in the stem? Have you split the stem?
I have not. I have examined it, and I've cut them off because I actually don't even put them in the compost because I'm concerned might spread because this is at our place out in Delhi that I'm having the problem, and I love the coneflower, and
Borer, you're doing the right things by removing the flower and disposing of it.
I'd have to look and maybe do a little diagnostic work there and see if we could get some. I haven't heard that. I haven't gotten that call from anybody else. You're the first with it. So I'm not really sure. I've never heard of a stem borer being a problem on coneflower.
Well, we tried, Marion. Maybe she can take it into her county's extension agent as well, perhaps. Sorry we can't be more help. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Our number is 513-419-7100. Lois is calling from Milford. Hi, Lois. What's your question?
My question is what to do about some very healthy rhododendrons that have never bloomed. I have fertilized them with specific to azalea and rhododendron gardens, and they look great with their green leaves, but no flowers. Next to them, I have hydrangeas that have done very well and received the same treatment. So just wanted to see if they had any thoughts on that.
Okay, first dumb question is, you're not pruning them, are you?
No.
Okay.
Why not? Is that
well, I mean, a lot of people get into the habit of pruning everything they have. And when you do that, in the case of rhododendrons and azaleas and a lot of other plants, you remove the flower buds. And so they're never going to bloom, but you can, you know, have this nice compact plant. Obviously, she hasn't done that. How long have they been in?
Oh, about 3 years now, mm-hmm. But just you asking that question makes me wonder if maybe some deer are coming in pruning them for me.
Well, that's possible.
The flower buds are pretty obvious. Have you noticed, you know, big plump buds on the end of the stems early in the year or even over winter?
I always, you know, would see, oh, they're coming on, and then just nothing would happen. You know, I don't examine them that closely. I have a lot of property, so, you know, it's kind of like I get into July or something, I'm like, those rhododendrons didn't bloom again this year. So,
you know, the standard answer to that, and it's not the right one, is that, you're fertilizing them and they're growing at the expense of flowers. I don't think that's the case of rhododendrons at all. I think, you know, the fact that they're healthy should mean that they're forming flower buds.
Well, congratulations, by the way,
yeah,
on
exactly.
That.
I don't hear that very often. I've got a great healthy rhododendron, and that's wonderful. But boy, I don't know. I just wonder if, you know, time. But after 3 years, you should be seeing some blooms on them.
David, haven't I heard you say in the past, and this is a number of years ago, and I only remember because I had some really awful looking rhododendron, but this is not the best area to grow rhododendron?
It's tough. And honestly, the best rhododendrons that I've ever seen growing around here have been professionally installed by nurserymen who know what they're doing, and they create the right environment for them. But, you know, the fact that, again, that she's got healthy ones leads me to believe that they're liking where they are.
Yeah, there are pockets, especially on the eastern part of town, where the soil is a little more acidic. So maybe in Milford she does have decent soil for rhododendrons. And maybe it is the deer. I would look over at the plants this winter and see if there are buds formed, and then just kind of keep an eye on them and see what happens in the spring, whether they just disappear like they've been eaten, or whether they rot or fall off, or it's kind of a difficult one to answer.
You've got a mystery for us here today, Lois. But perhaps you can try that and let us know next year if you did notice that it was a deer.
Maybe I'll put some of that deer netting over them.
Yes.
There you go. Thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it.
All right.
Our number is 513-419-7100. Joe is calling in. He's from OSU Extension. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Can we get this guy off the radio?
No.
Apparently you're all friends.
Joe, I hope you've got an answer on that stem borer.
That's exactly why I was calling.
Thank you.
It is called the sunflower head clipping weevil.
Good Lord.
Yeah, I know. It's actually it's becoming quite a problem in greater Cincinnati with cone flowers as well as compass flower, quite a group that it can affect. And the female weevils cut the stem, but it doesn't totally detach. And then she lays her eggs inside that dangling head. And once the head hits the ground, her eggs hatch and the larvae, the immature weevils, feed on it. So even though you were thinking a stem borer, your advice was dead on, so to speak, and that is get rid of those heads and get rid of the heads that are on the ground. Where we've had a problem in greater Cincinnati, that's helped to reduce the population of weevils to the point where some plantings have eliminated the problem.
Joe, say that again, the name of it.
It's called the Sunflower Head Clipping Weevil.
Wow.
I know, Dave, you're thinking I made that up.
No, I'm not. I'm not.
Thought crossed my mind.
You know, Joe is the Hamilton County OSU Extension agent, and Joe, a couple weeks ago, we had a question on galls, and Joe has, with Jim Chatfield, has written a series of articles in the American Nurseryman on galls, and they're just, it's really incredible writing and research that they did on those. And anybody who is, you know, finds some strange growth on their foliage of their oak trees or whatever can look that up, and it was really well-done material.
Well, thanks, Dave. Yeah, So what you're saying is anybody that's interested in strange growth on
the
trees.
Well, yeah.
I'll keep that in mind, Joe. There you go. Thanks.
I'll get off of here.
So well, thank you so much for calling in with that answer, the sunflower head clipping
weevil.
All
right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. We appreciate it. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition as we're talking about your gardens and lawns today. If you have a question, call us, 513-419-7100. Email talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter, and we'll continue our discussion in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mary Ann Zalesnik, filling in for Mark Haney. We're talking about preparing your lawn and garden for fall. Joining me, Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturalist and chairman of the Taking Root campaign, Scott Berline, co-owner of Home Meadow Song Farm and director of the community garden program at Turner Farm, Peter Hunninger, and Campbell County Horticulture Extension agent David Kester. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or send us a question or a comment on Facebook or Twitter. You can email talk@wvxu.org. So what should people be planting now? What should they be thinking about right now?
In the vegetable garden, we can still grow lettuce. We can there's an overwintering carrot called Napoli, which I really like. You can plant it this time of year. You can maybe harvest a little bit in the in November or so, but it'll also overwinter. So, and it seems to get sweeter as it stays in the ground. And then garlic, of course, is a great thing to be planting in September. And we've got a couple classes on garlic on the 16th and 17th of September. And they're $12 to come to it, but you get a clove of about four or five different garlics to take home and plant. So it's going to be kind of fun.
Well, that I don't know, often think about. When is it ready to pick?
It'll actually start to grow a little bit this fall, and you overwinter it, maybe mulch it a little bit. And then in June or so of next year, when the foliage starts to die back, is when the garlic, the cloves can be dug. And the wonderful thing about it is the garlic that you buy at the store, at large stores, is from California, and it's generally a very mild garlic, which in my mind, mild means bland. So the ones that you can grow have a lot more flavor, and the ones that you get at your farmer's market are generally those kind, and you can buy those. But if you want to grow some garlic yourself, this is, grow it yourself. It's great.
What about planting bulbs? Is this a good time to do that? And if you're going to do it now, I had a really bad experience once, and I've lost my faith in bulb planting.
What?
Because I thought I really had done this great job, and I noticed there were some squirrels around, and nothing came up the next year, and I realized the squirrels had eaten all of my bulbs. So how do you protect from that?
Well, at the zoo, we plant 100,000 tulips, and the squirrels eat 50,000 of them.
Oh my gosh.
No, I don't think it's that bad. But they're literally watching us plant them in the trees, and as soon as we leave, they're back down in the ground digging them up. If you have a big bed of tulips, you can put plastic netting over the top, and that seems to do a pretty good job of protecting them through to spring. And then when they start to grow, you can kind of pull that netting out. Planting daffodils and a lot of the minor bulbs, those are immune basically to squirrels. They don't bother those.
So it's tulips.
Mainly it's tulips, yeah.
What about hyacinths, though?
No, hyacinths are pretty much...
They ate all my hyacinths.
Hmm. Ooh, you have determined squirrels. Yeah.
Marianne, we hired two former zoo employees at our office, and both of them still have nightmares about planting tulips at the zoo. But the spring display at the Cincinnati Zoo when those bulbs are in bloom is just spectacular.
Yeah, we've got it down to a science, but it's still really hard work.
How deep do you plant the bulbs?
We try to get them at 6 inches deep at least if
really?
We can. Yeah, you know, by the 80th or 90th thousand, I think the depth gets a little less. But yeah, this is also, you know, people think don't think about trees for planting in the fall, but October, November are two, maybe the best months for planting trees. And in fact, the Taking Root
Branch
campaign.
Branch is called with that question.
Oh, is that right? So, there we go.
So what should, this is a good time to do it? And what
I would wait a little bit. I would wait until mid-October when the trees are starting to go dormant. And there seems to be a time period in our fall when it goes from hot and dry to damp and warm. And I like to wait until we hit that peak where the skies are leaden most of the time and not bright blue. And I think that's when you really are in the prime tree planting season, right up until when it gets really cold and the ground freezes. But the Taking Root campaign has got a Make a Difference Day campaign going on to plant trees as a volunteer project on Make a Difference Day, which is October 24th. So if you are interested in learning more about that, go to our website and send us a message.
And I believe we probably have a link on our website as well,
WVXU.org.
Yeah. John's calling from Dayton. Hi, John. What's your question?
Hi. My question has to do with the emerald ash borer. We have two ash trees in our backyard, and expecting to lose them, I went ahead and purchased some insecticide and poured it around the tree, and miraculously, I started that, I think I did it end of last summer, maybe beginning of fall, and then I made another application in the spring this year, and my ash trees are looking wonderful, and the ones in the neighborhood many of them have died. Mm-hmm. Is there anything, I mean, it doesn't say on the container, so far as I can tell, how often I need to apply that. Should I make another application, having done so in the spring, before the winter sets in?
Right.
Scott?
Yeah. With the soil drench chemical, once a year is probably still the best advice. Some people have said once every other year, but... timing of the application is really the most important thing. Putting it down in that week that the leaves are expanding, or the week prior to the week when the leaves are expanding, that seems to be critical as to getting the chemical up into the tree. So if you're doing it yourself, I would be very careful to follow the instructions exactly and get the timing down right. You might consider having a professional come do it. It might be a little bit more expensive, but some of the chemicals they're using don't need to be applied every year, maybe every two, possibly every third. So it might be worth at least talking to a professional about.
John, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. Carol's calling from Anderson. Hi, Carol. What's your question?
Yes. I have a question about a possible fungus on my plants. I keep replacing plants every year, and I'm not sure what is killing them. I noticed that the leaves on my Brunera plants would kind of turn brown, black, and kind of curl up. At first, I thought they were getting too much sun. But then I planted a dappled willow this past spring, and it has died completely. I had red tweed dogwood shrubs in the past that dried up and died.
Is this her yard or is this her plants? What do you think?
Those are all very different plants, and I don't think and plants are pretty specific to the diseases and insects that will. It isn't one fungus will come through and will wipe out all your plants. I think what you've got to do is get them identified individually, take them to your county extension office, a good sample of them. And as far as the red twig dogwood, don't hesitate to also take a portion of the roots with some soil attached to them and take them there. And I think you can get and don't forget about the value of digital pictures. We can really do an awful lot of diagnostics that way. If you'll send good pictures of these things, we can sometimes help just immediately.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Carol. We appreciate it. We go now to Joyce in Sharonville. Hi, Joyce. What's your question?
My question is pertaining to my knockout roses. They have been beautiful for about 5 years. And this year, I didn't get hardly any flowers on them. And I was wondering, what was I doing wrong? I had put the rose food on them to keep out the bugs and everything. And then I put a little coffee grounds around them. And my flowers just, I only had one or two on each of my bushes. And I was wondering, was there something else I could do?
We have found that knockout roses aren't quite the answer to everything that we thought they were. They may be resistant to black spot, but they are showing powdery mildew. And one of the things that has just really decimated ours at the office is this rose rosette virus. And as far as the blooming thing, it may be more of the year that we had. And I think you're doing everything you right by going ahead and fertilizing and doing that. But you might want to look at the foliage carefully and see what's, you know, I hate to tell you that you've got to start spraying knockout roses, because that's why we all planted them, because you didn't have to do that. And but take a look at them, and possibly one of the things that I don't think is a bad idea with those occasionally is to really give them a hard pruning when they're dormant, and rejuvenate them, you know, maybe do that in February, March, fertilize them at that time, and then see how they come out.
Last spring, and they grew very slowly. They're half the size that they were last August. Hmm.
Do they have kind of contorted foliage or a lot of redness to the plant?
Once the plant begins to bloom the leaves, they're red. Then they turn to green.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time to start something fresh there, maybe?
Or no. Like, as with the previous caller, get good pictures and send to your extension agent.
Okay. Now, my lilac bush, I've had that 5 or 6 years, and I moved it 3 years ago, and it still has not bared any fruit.
Hmm. They can sometimes be finicky about reblooming. Joe Boggs, who we just talked to a little while ago, taught me an awful lot about the lilac borer. That is something that I would look at the base of that plant and see if you see any sawdust or anything like that. And basil pruning some of that out can help. If you moved it to a too shady of an area, that can kind of delay flowering as well.
Joyce, thanks so much for calling. Good luck with all of those. We hope we can you get some success there or get some help when you send that in. Todd emailed. He has fire bushes. He says they're now 8 feet tall. He wants to know if he can cut them back to 1 foot without killing them.
Fire bushes?
The only thing I can think is that burning bush, maybe?
Burning bush.
Burning bush, okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
The short answer is we don't know. the second short answer is you could probably get away with it if it's a shrub in the wintertime. You know, obviously, it sets back a plant, but most things will grow back.
Dave's calling from Loveland. Hi, Dave. What's your question?
Dave? Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yes, what's your question?
Yes, my question is, I have hydrangeas that are about 10 years old, and I live in a condo area. These things have grown 4 to 5 feet every year, and the stems are so weak, they fall over, and they're just all spread out on almost the ground, you know, like a foot high. And I'm wondering what I can do to get them to stand up. You know, do I cut them a certain way in the fall or whenever you cut them? I noticed that some of the other hydrangeas in the condo area aren't as high at the same time. Can you help me with that?
My guess is there might be two things going on here. Do these get pruned every year?
Yes.
They do? You might try pruning less heavily and allowing the plant to kind of firm up at the stems that are there. And it's possible it may be getting too much fertilization, either through the lawn or just applications of fertilizer to the plant, causing it to grow so much.
Okay. okay?
All right. Well, good luck, Dave. Thank you. We have another hydrangea question. This is from Christy. She wants to know, her plants get bigger each year, but they never bloom.
What kind of plants?
Hydrangeas.
Oh, hydrangeas. Which type of hydrangea?
That's all I know. Christy, your hydrangeas. Christy's hydrangeas, that's what I know.
Oftentimes, as Dave said before, that's an issue of too much nitrogen fertilizer, but not necessarily. It could be too much shade. It could be improper pruning. It could be deer.
What's the best location for a hydrangea?
Well, the big leaf hydrangeas like a little bit of shade, lots of moisture. Oak leaf hydrangeas can go anywhere from shade to sun with average soil and average moisture. And the paniculata types are about like the oak leaves.
There has been an explosion of hydrangeas being released, and there are just some excellent ones. And that the last caller with the blooms that fall over, they've actually developed now some that are much sturdier, and the flower heads are more erect and upright. So I would really do some research on those and find out. But there's some just gorgeous hydrangeas out there now.
So maybe just start fresh with something different. Karen's calling right now. Hi, Karen. What's your question?
Yes. I like to see how you go about turning your yard natural instead of, you know, having the grass patches have all flowers and stuff for the wildlife.
Peter?
Well, there's a number of things you can do. One of the things is a lot of people with their in with their ornamental flowers and stuff, they'll begin to integrate edible landscaping. In fact, on the 26th of this month, on Saturday, down at the East End, at the Turner Farm Community Garden Program, we're doing a sort of a workshop, and you plant and learn at the same time. We're going to be planting gooseberries and currants. So there's some things you can do with some woody perennials and things like that. There's also a lot of people are using native plants, native ornamental grasses, and there's a number of different organizations. I know, Scott, you've been involved with a number of things like the Wild Ones and then your different initiatives.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun planting a prairie several years ago. The main thing is you can't just turn your yard loose. That will not result in the result that you want. You want to integrate a lot of native plants, some bigger plants, bigger perennials and grasses into your landscape. Learn what you're doing. You know, keep it weeded. It's actually a process, and it's quite involved. There's a lot of really good books out there right now that kind of touch on this. You know, Google books about meadows or books about prairie gardens. There's a lot of fun you can have with it, and the rewards are huge with wildlife and different things. You have to care. Though it looks very natural and it's wild, it actually is a very controlled type of gardening, like almost any gardening.
So it takes a lot of work.
It takes a lot of work, and not, you know, a lot of work, but a lot of preparation and knowledge to do it well.
Karen, thanks so much for your call.
And one thing about what Scott said is that I know at home my wife is working with some homeschool kids that she works with on doing a little native prairie, and they started off with a space that's like 20 by 20 feet, kind of an oval shape, and they, you know, cleared that, got rid of perennial weeds, established plants, and then over the last 4 years they're beginning to fill in, and the idea is that in another year or two, they expand the parameters of that and to kind of move out. So one thing you can do is you can keep a lot of your lawn because you don't want to upset your neighbors, and, you know, find a couple spots where you want to, you know, begin to integrate these things and do it step by step.
It's great advice.
John's calling from Florence. Hi, John. What's your question? John?
Hello?
Yes. What's your question?
I have zucchinis and yellow summer squash and watermelons that have been attacked by squash bugs. And while I've been putting an organic pesticide on them every so often, I was told I probably should have to move them next year to kind of break a cycle. What can I plant in their place?
Well, you want to grow plants that are not in the squash family. I mean, that's the simple things. And if you have if you're taking off diseased leaves and organic matter that you think is still infested with the insects, you know, get yourself some of the lawn bags and send them off to the city's compost as opposed to home composting. That'll save you some problems. I mean, you probably were spraying with neem oil. I know that's one common insecticide that's organic certified that people are using. Also, sometimes people start having a problem with blossom end rot. And in that case, what you want to do as soon as the zucchini fruit is developed, you want to take the flowers and get them off and sort of wipe their nose and let them to continue to grow. But in terms of your rotation, I mean, you can follow with beans would be one thing. You could nightshade plants. You could, you know, follow with peppers or tomatoes. But, you know, it's hard for the home gardener. You don't have a 40-acre farm where you can, you know, kind of do big field rotation. But still, it's really important, even if you have two raised, 4 by 10 foot raised beds, to really kind of move things back and forth, particularly if you've had a problem with a specific insect.
All right. Well, John, thank you so much for your call. We don't have time to get to Valerie real quick, though. She wanted to know about honeysuckle growing in a tree. Somebody said it was clematis. She wanted to know if it's going to hurt the tree. 10 seconds.
Not doing the tree any good. Get it out of there.
All right. There you go. Well, thank you all for being here. As always, more questions than time, but we appreciate it so much. We've been talking with Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturist and chairman of the Taking Root campaign, Scott Berline, co-owner of Home Meadow Song Farm and director of the community garden program at Turner Farm, Peter Hunninger, and Campbell County Horticulture Extension agent, David Kester. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Today's technical director was Kevin Rowinski. Archives of our program are available on our website, WVXU.org. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Mark Haney. Stay with us for Here and Now at 2 o'clock.
At one time or another, most of us have asked ourselves the question, how can I be happier? On the next Cincinnati Edition, we'll hear how one man answered that question in his book, Authentic Happiness and 7 Emails. And we'll talk with Chris Ravenscraft. Over the last decade, he's recorded more than 3,000 podcast episodes covering a wide range of topics and is now known as the Podcast Answer Man. That Cincinnati Edition, Friday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.